And hello once again, it's Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world. Welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, and gizmos and the tech news that you can use. And a great big welcome to our hopefully expanded audience because we have gone on to iTunes. Last Monday we posted the first show. And now this is the one we know we're on iTunes because last week I wasn't positive if I was going to be able to get it to work. But we are now on iTunes. So subscribe, tell your friends, make the little numbers go up.
If nothing else, it's entertaining, right?
It is. Actually, the process of developing and getting a podcast onto iTunes is real interesting, and you actually have to go through a process. They actually have to look at your podcast, and because it's interesting, because I didn't think we'd have any problem qualifying, considering some of the even names of podcasts that on iTunes that we have seen, most of which I can't actually say. In fact,
yeah, some you cannot say on the
you
air.
You cannot say on the
That's
air.
That's why they're podcasts.
What is Selected Shorts, which is a popular NPR program, has a podcast called Too Hot for Radio, and it is in fact stuff that they
the FCC
would be most unhappy about.
Definitely. Well, it's either subject matter or phraseology or things like that that are let's just say there's usually adult content.
Content, including a couple of tech shows where it seems like the guys, all they want to do is drop the F-bomb every few minutes.
Yeah, and it's a little
every few seconds.
Tiresome.
You won't hear that here because this show is broadcast friendly.
it is
family friendly.
It's also broadcast over the air.
Yeah.
So we have to play by those rules anyway.
Yeah, so
I think we would anyhow.
We would. It's just not our style. Anyway, boomertechradio.com, the website, and now featuring, among other things, some product reviews because we have people sending us products. And
not
so,
sure how that happened.
Well, it started when we went to CES, Consumer Electronics Show. Had a great time, did a live show from down there. We didn't get to podcast that one, although we may.
Yeah, archive
that one.
Archive
that one onto iTunes because that was
You'll get there. It's a work in progress.
It is. But we had a great visit from Star Ackerman of IK Multimedia. She was one of our guests. And some of the other places where we went, we wound up with a pile of swag from CES, than we'd ever brought back before.
Right, but we'd been to CES before, too.
Yeah.
So
but
I don't know. Maybe it was
stuff.
That magic little banner on the bottom of your tag that said 5+
years. I got
years.
People emailing me now and saying, can you evaluate our products? And I'm going, who, me?
Why not?
Yeah, well, so I am going to, we talked about some of the things that I'm going to mention here, but the other, in my other life, I'm a producer for a small town radio station, as those of you who listen to KCNR know, but also I'm a videographer, and videography has gotten so much more cool just in the last couple of years, because instead of those big, heavy, tape-based cameras that
send you to the chiropractor.
Very bulky, short battery life. I started using video cameras, mobile video cameras in the 1970s, and they were big honking things back then.
Small video cameras have been around for a long time, but in the formats that are used in the internal file formats and things like that, we're not necessarily compatible with the work that you do now. So that's a different story these days.
And that has changed with the pretty much universal adoption of what's called the H.264 wrapper or the MP4 format. And so smartphones are our new video cameras. Now, one thing that smartphones lack for the most part is really good glass. But if you want to work within that limitation, you can come up with some pretty decent footage. And in fact, a repurposed Samsung Galaxy S5 is my B-roll camera of choice now because it's light, compact, and as you have pointed out,
unobtrusive. People are used to seeing these things in selfies and people taking videos all the time, and they're just not intimidated by it. So when you're doing an interview or whatever, it really does not become the focus of things. It's there and people are aware of it, but they're used to seeing it. So it's just not a big deal. They relax and you know, act more normal, and then they don't try to stare into the big eyeball that's mm-hmm. looking, you know, the big glass eyeball that's looking at them. You know, there is no substitute for a nice camera lens. But with digital imagery, you know, even with a small, tiny lens, you can still get some pretty stunning visuals because of the pixels resolution.
Yeah.
You get that nice high definition resolution on there, and it looks pretty good. You
digital
just
zoom actually can yeah
is
can
not
stay
so bad.
Viable for
right
a while,
exactly, and it's not so bad doing that. Or you just have to be aware of the limitations of the lens mm-hmm. that you're working with, and if you need to get up close to something, you got to get up pretty close. But you can still get some really
right.
good stuff.
So today I went out on a video shoot. And I took two things instead of my big, heavy Canon camera, which is still my main, you know, that's still my heavy
gun. It's
a
workhorse,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's my workhorse. I took my Galaxy S5, which it's my S5 Active, which is no longer a phone. Instead, it is a camera and music player and thermal scanner and many other things.
It's a mini computer.
But if you've ever tried to shoot good video,
it's your tricorder.
Yes, if you've ever tried to shoot good video with a camera phone, you know it's kind of hard to hold it steady and get a good shot. And YouTube is just full of just crap video that's all shaky and badly framed and things like that.
I've recently been researching some video of cloud formations, time lapse of cumulus clouds, to be specific. And I'm rolling my eyes going, people, they need some lessons about framing. And
let me guess, about half of them were shot in upright mode in the portrait.
No.
Really, most of them were landscape.
Most of them were landscape.
Okay.
But they just missed the point of the science, too. So, you know, mm-hmm. I'm still looking. There was one that wasn't too bad.
So if you want to be able to shoot good cell phone video, there's a couple of ways to do it. One of the products, when we were at CES, one of the products we were shown from IK Multimedia when Star Ackerman came to visit us was the iClip phone, what they call it, the smartphone broadcast mount. And it's intended for use with the iPhone. But it does also work on Android phones. It has a universal clip on it. It's a nice chunk of aluminum with a handle on one end and a place to plug in a professional type mic. It has a preamplifier, place to plug in a headphone, and then it has a outlet that lets you run audio into your phone so that you get that professional grade audio actually feeding into your phone. Now, one limitation on the Android is that you can't monitor the audio while it's being shot on the phone because there is not an Android app that works with the iClip. However, you can shoot straight audio, you can record the audio, but you can't monitor it in real time. That, since mostly the camera is used for B-roll, that's not a big thing for me because B-roll is just whatever sound happens to be there,
right,
and I use the camera's own, the phone's own microphones.
And there's usually voiceover or something like that
right.
on top of it anyway. It's just the visuals that you're after in this particular case.
But having
B-roll.
That nice handle...
It makes a
to
difference.
Grab the phone by,
yeah.
and then you can steady it. Today, I actually had a selfie stick attached to the bottom of the iClip to stabilize it even more, and got some pretty decent video out of it. So, then the other rig I used today, so that's the iClip. The other rig I used today was, and you can pick these up at Costco, is the Sunpak Action Camera Accessory Kit. And the nice thing about the Sunpak is that it has a U-shaped handle, and you can fasten the phone to it. But it also has another quarter-inch fitting on the bottom that, in this case, what I did is I have the GoPower battery pack, which just happens to have a quarter-inch screw mount on it. And I fasten the battery pack to the bottom of the mount, and now I've got a camera with good longevity, and I can hang on to it. Because the GoPro's a little tricky to maneuver around because it's so small.
Right. You can definitely get lots of shaky stuff with that.
So we got a lot of neat animal pictures today.
And that Sunpak is very ergonomic. It's very easy to use, and you can get some really neat shots with that kind of thing. And then we're... anxiously awaiting our next
from
rigs
Tiffin, yes.
from Tiffin and their itty bitty teeny tiny call them mini Steadicams, and it was a what do you call those? Kickstarter, thing that we ran across, crowdfunding campaign, and that was our first ever doing that, and we thought, well, okay,
so yeah, it's a tiny little Steadicam,
kind
it's
of
really
a
exciting
chunk of change, but on the other hand, it's Tiffin, and Steadicams are well known, and so we figured that they would have no trouble meeting their expectations for a Kickstarter, and indeed they did. So we got a smoking deal on their first production run, which is due out in about 2 months.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to making immediate use of that. It's an active stabilizer. Now, there are other active stabilizers on the market. DJI sells one.
Yes, they have a pretty good one.
But the trouble with that one is that it's dependent on a powered gyro, and if the battery goes flat, now you've got a stick tied to your camera. The Tiffin and I can't. I had the name right in front of me, and I just lost it. Anyway, the Tiffin Steadicam, which is meant for smartphones, actually uses a balanced gimbal. Now it has a power in it to slow down and stabilize a phone, so it doesn't swing all over the place. But you can use the device without any power applied to it.
By the way, if you're interested in learning how to do video techniques and improving your shots and maybe getting some ideas for do-it-yourself cheap ways to improve the looks of your videos, or you have a young person that's interested in getting started in these things, we can highly recommend Video Maker Magazine.
Oh, yes.
And it's, for us, right here, a local entity. It's out of Chico, California. They've been around a long time, and they have lots of great ideas about how you can use simple things like bean bags and stuff like that that you can make yourself to get professional results without having to spend a lot of money on all of the bells and whistles, because, you know, as soon as it has audio visual attached to it, it's automatically more expensive.
Yeah.
And that's just the way these things are. Sort of like boats, you know. If you put marine anything on it, it's expensive. Whether it really is special or not, but to most of the time it is. But if you have someone who's interested in making a film, doesn't have a lot of money, there's a lot of really great low-budget ideas to give you professional-looking results at Video Maker Magazine.
Yeah, there's no excuse for shaky, horrible sound video. Just none whatsoever.
The two biggest mistakes we see people make are, one, they shoot things in portrait frame. That's the phone is, you know, the long side of the lens is upright. You want to shoot it in landscape, which is to put it horizontal. First of all, you can grab it in landscape very easily with both hands. Hold your elbows into your rib cage, and that provides a much more steady platform. And the second thing people do is they move way too fast. If you're going to move the phone, move slowly, or you're going to make people car sick. It's it's like the virtual reality things. You're going to make people motion sick.
Mm-hmm.
So slow down, take your time, and go slow and try to be steady. And those two will do. And be in landscape.
And your fans will be happy.
Yes, it will do a lot. Right, those things right there will do a lot to improve the appearance of your videos.
So
watchability of your videos, I should say.
Yes. So among the things that were sent to me in the last couple of weeks, now there's a company called iClever. Now, you notice that everything that's cool has to have an I, a small lowercase I in the name.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that it kind of implies, you know, that it's associated with Apple same quality, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like a branding thing that they want to piggyback on that.
Exactly. So the iHome series of Bluetooth speakers, they make a lot of stuff for a lot of third-party accessories for the iPhone. But this company called iClever, Chinese company, but their products are actually not too bad. So they sent me a couple of products, and I'm reviewing them on the Boomer Tech Radio site. But what I wanted to talk about here was the iClever folding keyboard, and I've got a let me pull up here real quick because I want to go to the site. By the way, if you go to boomertechradio.com, you can see the reviews, and here's few seconds ago, I was tapping the screen of my MacBook Pros. I have my MacBook Pro and my tablet right next to each other.
Yeah, I know. The problem with that is that they are in the same physical form. In other words, they have a keyboard on the desk, right? And,
yeah.
And a screen. And it's like, why won't this work on my laptop? And it's just
and I found out I'm not the only one who does that.
I've done it to your MacBook.
Yeah.
So what Bob's talking about is, if you're at all familiar with the television show Westworld, there is a little tablet thing that they have that unfolds.
Yeah.
And this is a keyboard that Bob is talking
right.
about.
Right, well, it's folding very keyboards are nothing new. Now, if you've got something like in the 7-inch tablet range, let's say like the iPad Mini or especially Kindle Fire HD, 7-inch or 8-inch, nice tablet, but typing on it is just odious.
Yeah, kind of a miserable experience.
Because when the pop-up keyboard comes up, you have no screen left whatsoever.
Nothing. That's true.
So, or if you want to tap in real quick with a wireless keyboard to connect to your smart TV or maybe your all-in-one computer, the iClever keyboard is full size, a little bit cramped for adult hands. And this is the BK08, and it comes in a little pouch, and you unfold it, and that powers it up. So there's no power switch on it, which is kind of neat. And it can attach to up to 3 devices. Now, the keyboard has full-size keys, a little bit cramped for adult hands, though.
Back up a little bit. Mm-hmm. It can attach to 3 devices at once.
You use function keys to pop between the 3 devices.
Oh, wow. That's
cool.
Or
it can be a directly wired keyboard through the USB port.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's about a foot wide when unfolded, 11 inches, and then 3.5 inches high. The right quarter of it is occupied by a touchpad. Now, the caveat here is the touchpad doesn't work on iOS devices. But on the Kindle, I suddenly have a mouse on my Kindle.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And in fact, the review that's posted on Boomer Tech Radio was written entirely on the Kindle using the Office Pro app. And I had to train my fingers not to hit the backspace or to brush against the touchpad. Sometimes touchpads will do that. You know, your
right.
finger kind of brushes along and your cursor goes to parts unknown. But when you're traveling extremely light, the combination of the iClever BK08 folding keyboard and a 7-inch range tablet, you can stay in touch with the world and travel extremely light.
Do all kinds of stuff. Now, one thing we can't comment on yet is durability, and that'll come with time.
Well, this actually, the main body of the keyboard is aluminum. And the hinges look pretty steady, and it looks like there's a overall the build quality I would say is pretty good. I'll hand it to Brenda here. By the way, at some point in the future, we may actually start thinking about doing some video type stuff here, so that we can show off some of these products, especially if people keep sending us stuff. So it seems to be better made than a lot of products of this genre, and for $54,
yeah.
$59.95, it's awfully hard to beat.
You can't buy some of these keyboard covers for your tablet for that price.
Right.
And it has versatility. There's one thing that I like about it, and its compact size definitely gives it a plus.
By the way, you know, I use an iPad 12.9-inch iPad Pro, and I've been looking for a easy solution to be able to use it in portrait mode, because that when I'm doing word processing, it's nice to have the exact same size of a sheet of paper sitting there right in front of me. So I've got a snap-in keyboard where I can use the iPad like a mini laptop, but I've been searching around for a solution, and I found the multifunction Logitech K480 keyboard that has a neat little slot. And the
iPad, like an easel.
Yeah, the iPad just fits into the slot. It Bluetooths up. And much like the iClever, Logitech will connect to up to 3 different devices selected by a switch. Keys on the Logitech, a little bit on the squishy side, but adequate for touch typing. I was able to get messages out and type away.
So it keeps you moderately compact. I would say it's kind of on the large size of compact.
It's a little bulky in the backpack, but...
But it allows you some versatility. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be possible if you had the right setup to actually have a multi-screen mm-hmm. keyboard and go here and do that and on this screen and go over there and do that on that screen. I mean, that part is really cool because if you're running and gunning or you're out in the field or you need some kind of a compact setup, you could have a couple tablets and work with a keyboard like that very effectively.
Mm-hmm. Finally, as we get ready to head into the break here, one last thing that I'm going to be reviewing next week is possibly one of the best Bluetooth speakers for the money that I've seen. I'm going to do a full review on this on next week's show, the BTS-08 iClever Bluetooth speaker. I was rattling the house pretty good with this beast last night.
I was always curious about these things, and I'm always after how much bass can it produce. Because that's the tricky one with small speakers is how do you deliver bass? And now they have these clever little things that use a tabletop or some hard surface to produce a little more bass. I'm not sure that speaker needs it. So we have a little more testing to do on that. And poking around with it and see what we think. But so far, it's performing quite well.
It has been amazingly well. So we're getting ready for our bottom of the hour break. By the way, if you want to catch up with what we're doing on the show, boomertechradio.com. It's our good old WordPress blog. We also host the show there. It's also on iTunes, of course. But that's where you can send us comments, topics for suggestions, or send us more stuff. But
hey, we'll review anything.
Yeah, we'll review anything. BoomerTechRadio@gmail.com, by the way.
Bob has nanites in his blood. Yeah. You know, he was born with loose electrons.
Yep. I was just trying to think of something before we get down to the bottom of the hour. We have like very hard breaks for this show now. And there's new clouds.
Oh, yes. Most people are probably not aware that there is...
They've always been there, but they're newly cataloged, right?
Right, newly named or newly classified. Most people are probably not aware there's actually a cloud atlas that's produced by the World Meteorological Organization, and I have an antique copy, if you will, but it hasn't been updated in 30 years, I understand, which is really spans most of my meteorological career.
Well, they figured they'd seen them all.
Yeah. Yeah, they have new things now, and I'll bet you the pictures are better, so... I got to get my grubby mitts on one of those. I think it would be really neat to see what they've done.
Do they have a website or something?
WMO does, I believe. Mm-hmm. I'll have to go look that up. Now you're going to make me do homework.
Yeah, World Meteorological Association. Well, it'd be nice to be able to tell them.
Organization. WMO, yes.
It would be nice to be able to tell the listeners where they can fix it. Because a lot of tech geeks are weather geeks.
They set all the standards for weather reporting formatting in terms of, how the observations are done. Weather balloon data is reported in the same format worldwide, and so the WMO is the governing body for that sort of thing. And so they have a lot of clout in the industry and provide a lot of guidance or, mm-hmm. Standardization or whatever. That's the organization that we look for that.
So did you go look at the new cloud porn?
I have not yet. Nope, I haven't seen it yet. And... maybe they have better color pictures. The old atlas is kind of dated.
Kind of lackluster.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob. She's Brenda. More of the tech news that you can really use after the break. Podcasts. And we're back. Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda. And I'm going to apologize publicly to my wife for putting her on the spot because I had like 2 minutes of the show to fill before we took the break. And I was out of stuff. I didn't want to start a whole new topic and then have to cut it off at the end of the show. So I figured talking about new clouds would fill about 2 minutes. A new cloud atlas, which I guess is online now.
It is. The World Meteorological Organization has now issued a digital version, which is great because if they get better imagery, then they can... update that with it. But there's 12 new clouds that are in there. And, there's some basic classifications.
There's an asparagus cloud or something.
No. That's not called asparagus. It looks like that. I don't know how to pronounce it. Asparitis? Uh-huh. Something like that. Anyway,
doesn't look like an asparagus?
No, it doesn't. It's actually one of these things. So if you want to have a lot of fun, though, go to the Cloud Appreciation Society's website, which is and read their manifesto. It's a riot. Mm-hmm. And I always thoroughly enjoy that. It's quite a little, it's, you know, just a little thing, but it's quite amusing. I believe it is based in Britain.
That would make sense.
The manifesto has a kind of that tongue-in-cheek, dry British humor there. Yeah, absolutely. So there's, you know, optical phenomena and all those kinds of things get listed in there as well. But clouds were classified, I think they started that in the 1800s sometime, or was it the early 1900s?
No,
it was the scientist before that, you know, there was no good way. So Latin is used to classify, you know, cloud names have meaning and all of that kind of stuff. So it's not just a casual thing.
I love it on Facebook and other things. Nobody has ever seen a cloud like this before. What does it mean? Is it climate change? Blah, 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 blah. You know. No, nobody ever. You know, when we were kids, nobody had ever taken a good picture of a tornado.
Yeah.
And now they're everywhere. But up until like the 70s, there was no good video of an active tornado because anybody with any sense was running the other way. Or the camera equipment didn't survive the experience.
Well, you end up with cloud classification is kind of interesting. There's 10 basic genres, but then there are species within that genre. So ultimately, when you get down to something crazy, you can have, as this article points out, a name like altocumulus stratiformis translucidus perlucidus undulatis. Okay. Figure that out, right? I think I have it right. So, you know, there's some pretty, in other words, altocumulus undulatus. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that have the big waves on the bottom of them and stuff like that. We see them around here occasionally, but, you know, you can find them in a lot of places. So, you know, clouds are interesting, and they do tell you something about what kind of weather is going on. If you, you know, don't know anything else and you look at the clouds, they do indicate certain things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's no hard, fast rules sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, they are interesting.
So,
check out the article on Live Science, by the way, about the new cloud atlas. We should post that on Flipboard.
Yeah, we can put it up on the and we can put it on the site too, on our show notes. In fact, I had new cloud atlas. I got it in our show notes.
I'm delighted that it's digital.
We may add an additional member to our on the air staff here. I'm negotiating that deal because. We're a two-person operation here, and it gets to be, I'm not whining, you know, like a lean and mean operating machine, but trying to take care of all the computer stuff and the notes and the broadcast production while talking is a little bit, Brendan knows I'm not the world's greatest multitasker anyway, so.
You're saying you're overwhelmed. That's because you keep... adding things to do with it.
I'd like to
add. This was your idea, remember? You had the third person, now you got to herd that cat, too.
Yeah, well, I think that will work out. Apple is trying to reassure its customer base. Why? Had you heard about this one?
No.
A group calling itself Turkish Crime Family.
Oh, my gosh.
Is threatening to delete an alleged list of compromised login credentials and is demanding $75,000 of cryptocurrency in either Bitcoin or Ether, or they will settle, get this, for $100,000 worth of iTunes gift cards.
Okay,
you think this might be some kids?
Yeah.
this, according to Motherboard, the group has given Apple a deadline of April the 7th to meet their demands. Apple is saying, no, they don't have access to 300 million accounts. Well, they claim to have 600 million accounts. The numbers vary, but according to these hackers allege that they can get into 559 million Apple email and iCloud accounts, and if you don't, and the accounts get it in the head if you don't pay the ransom.
Well, Apple hasn't officially confirmed the authenticity of the data that the hackers say they have. But allegedly, an Apple spokesperson told Fortune magazine in an emailed statement that if the list is legitimate, then it wasn't obtained through any hack of Apple. So these characters may have that, but they got it from other than Apple. Apple insists they got it from other than Apple.
A lot of people use like their iCloud account. Now, this is a perfectly good reason why you never use the same exact password across multiple platforms.
True enough. Right.
Yeah. Very, well, you know, if you use our trick of use a phrase, do letter number substitution, run it all together, and mix it up between your different accounts. You can keep the same root phrase, but change, you know, a capital to a lowercase, or change out what number you're substituting. And you actually can, and throw in a little extra punctuation.
Right. This is a trick of cyber criminals, that they recycle the information they got from somewhere else in the hopes that people have done exactly that, that they keep using the same password. You know, one password key is the key to all, and not such a good idea. But, you know, that all that being said, the likelihood of this event happening and there being some kind of a mass erasure of things through iCloud and such like it's quite unlikely, but it also is unknown. It remains to be seen, but it is very unlikely.
They do recommend, of course, go ahead and change up your password. Use a long, strong, hard-to-guess password like the ones we've talked about. Pick a phrase and change some letters and numbers around. Also, enable two-factor authentication where your phone becomes part of the authenticating process. Pain in the butt? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a whole lot less inconvenient than losing all of your data or whatever.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, smartphones, those of us that have them, have come to rely on a lot of their features as a necessity, or in some cases it's the only place you have certain things. Make sure you back it up, too.
All right. So, Brenda, have you ever left the house with your phone but without your purse?
No.
you often keep your phone in your purse.
No, I don't. I'm more likely to go off and leave the purse home and my phone. Actually, both together. Mm. I've gone off and left my phone at home, and then now I have the company phone, so I just text a few people that I'm worried about, knowing that I don't have my personal phone with me.
But if you're going to travel really light, to where you don't want to be carrying a purse,
or
stuffing a wallet.
There's even cases you have a wallet case that your phone has a lot to do with being your wallet.
Well, pretty soon, you may not actually need... Now, there are ways this could go wrong, but it's an interesting story. According to Engadget, Wells Fargo wants to do away with the ATM card. Now, one of the things that's been happening, of course, is ATM card skimmers pick up, read your card, and then see the number that you punch in. Well, one countermeasure may be to employ your phone as the access point for the ATM card. Now, that's only as good as your phone's security, but you know, both Apple and Android have some pretty sturdy countermeasures. And somebody could hold a gun to your head and make you, but they could do that with your ATM card too.
Right, but the thing about what Wells Fargo's doing is apparently their trials worked out very well, and they're going to be rolling out this feature nationwide. Is that you have two-factor authentication, you have your PIN, but then you have a one-time use only other PIN, or, you know, verifying code or whatever.
A door combination.
Yeah, if you will. Yeah, that is a one-time use key that you enter, digital numbers that you enter, and you get that from the app. Now, I'm not quite sure how that all works. We'll have to play with that. As we are Wells Fargo's customers, for better or for worse, that's a whole other story. But it'll be very interesting to see how well this works.
Well, it's similar to the security scheme where you request access and you get a barcode, a one-shot barcode on your phone that you then show to the scanner.
Right.
And that it unlocks the account.
Right. So it forces you.
And so even if somebody intercepts it, it's a one-shot, limited-time access.
However, it indicates in this article that they are not going to do away with the debit card access altogether because there are times or circumstances in which you would have to use that. So I would be willing to try that, the, you know, digital authentication. What would be even better is if it, your phone was sent a code and it had a scanner on the ATM that could read that code, just like using digital wallet features where you can use them, you know, where available. Instead of me having to type in numbers, because I am lousy getting phone numbers out of a phone book into the phone or what have you. I transpose stuff all the time. Well, how frustrating is that? Because I said, oh, wrong code, you know, boom, there you go. You don't have access to your account? Or try again type of thing. It's like those little things they call CAPTCHAs.
Oh, yeah.
On the to make sure that you're not a robot.
You mean the ones you can't read?
Yeah, the ones you can't read. You know, give me another one. Give me another one. Give me another one. Oh, well, there's one. Maybe I think this is what it is. And sometimes you can't tell whether it's an uppercase letter or a lowercase letter that they have in mind for things like P's and the, you know, the letter P, because little P and big P look the same. So it is inconvenient, but, you know, security is a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it would prevent the, you know, theft of the information that goes on at ATMs and, you know, gas pumps and things like that.
Speaking of security, can you imagine the boardroom meetings that are taking place at ABC News right now? Seems that someone got into the Twitter account of ABC News. Now, they could have done something, you know, pretty malicious, like a tweet that a war started or there was an assassination or this or that or the other thing. Well, they simply tweeted some snarky type comments and things like that.
Sort of like the McDonald's tweet,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. So, but that, you know, yeah, and this had to be a 12-year-old did this particular, you know, somehow got into the ABC News account, because it's not immediately obvious how the attackers got in. It should not have been possible, but supposedly this could have been a third-party plug-in. A few weeks ago, Amnesty International's Twitter account started tweeting Turkish nationalist propaganda. So we had the Turkish crime family, and now we have Turkish nationalist propaganda. Are we picking up a theme here?
Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Other ABC accounts were hacked into, including Good Morning America and the Good Morning America Pop News, Pop Now's, I think that's supposed to be Pop News sub-account. Company is working to resolve the problem.
Yeah, so. Well, you know.
So people talk about, you know, Trump and his tweets.
Well, it shouldn't have been possible.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was possible, whether it was some inside information or who knows where that came from. But it all goes to show that these corporations are not immune from this sort of thing. And, you know, the whole thing, this stuff starts to show up on a site like that, it's like, oh, that's obviously been hacked. Because seriously, the stuff that's showing on the screen here, that is not going to be sent out by ABC News. Mm-hmm. It's just not. Maybe somebody in there is disgruntled or whatever. But, you know, most of these breaches are from people who share passwords or, you know, leak stuff or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, if this wasn't supposed to happen, maybe their cybersecurity is not as good as they thought it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of things that aren't supposed to happen, very disturbing incident on Facebook involving Facebook Live, where the rape of a 15-year-old girl was broadcast on Facebook Live, watched by about 40 people, not one of whom contacted authorities.
Sickening.
Yeah. This is, and you have heard us talk about on this program with Periscope and Facebook Live. I'm going to forecast this. I hope I'm wrong, but somebody is going to fake an incident, a racially charged incident.
Or inflammatory of any kind. Doesn't even have to be racial.
Even using some pretty cheesy off-the-shelf special effects simulating an attack or some major incident in order to precipitate a panic. And if you couple that with, let's say, the hack of an ABC News Twitter account or anybody's, or let's say Trump's Twitter account.
So you got two sources of information that say the same thing,
yeah.
potentially.
Yeah. What are they going to do about this? Well, Facebook is facing a dilemma here.
Absolutely, because they really want to have video on Facebook and be a, you know, that being be a force out there, if you will. But at the same time, they clearly cannot police all of this. And so how does that get managed?
Yeah. Now, one of the video platforms I was thinking of using for Boomer Tech Radio was Facebook Live, because there's a story that that can now be pushed out from a desktop, because Facebook Live was strictly from smartphones, which wasn't practical for our studio setup. But now you can use actually better grade cameras, even a switcher, things like that on Facebook, actually literally broadcast. But here again, what's to keep somebody from broadcasting horrible, viable, awful stuff? You know, obviously, filter, you know, stuff that's pornographic can be taken down fairly quickly.
Right.
But
and some things
that there's just so much content.
But some things that are distasteful can be used to draw attention to the problem. At the same time, it can be used. While other applications may seem to glorify it. And so that is a very, very fine line, right? Mm. So how do you make that determination? And actually what may seem like calling attention to an issue for one person may look like glorification to another person. And
yeah.
it might provide copycat opportunities or ideas. And it's just, it's a tough one.
Yeah,
it's but it's not like, you know, potentially, this stuff could be on YouTube, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a matter of fact, they mentioned YouTube. Hundreds of hours of video is uploaded to YouTube every minute. If Facebook reaches that same level, how in the world do you possibly track and vet that, especially when the big push is that it's live happening right this second? Now, God knows that I am an absolute proponent of citizen journalism.
Oh, yes.
I think it's a total game changer. But it's a terribly powerful tool that can be abused.
Yep.
And put to evil use. So can any technology. But I'm a very much an anti-censorship person. So where do we find the balance? And that's a question I'm going to – I don't necessarily have an answer for.
I know I don't. This is – you know, it's a crazy new world mm-hmm. in that perspective.
One potential solution is a feature like Google's Cloud Video Intelligence. It allows a searching for the searching of specific objects within a group of video. Could be adapted to the screen to quickly analyze pictures and content and suspend a stream if something appears to fall outside norms that or have questionable content.
It's depressing that people would treat other people poorly or put violent and disturbing things out there for folks to see. And obviously this stuff goes on, you know.
And but, violence will continue.
Right.
What's amazing is that these individuals have no qualms about showing their faces to the world committing these heinous acts because it gives them street cred.
I sound like an old person when I say, what's the world coming to?
Yeah, exactly.
Back in the day, you know, bikinis were going to be the end of society. Today, they're just, you know, normal. So I would like to think that this does not become normal for our society, however.
A couple of years back, remember when we had the guy on who was talking about prosthetics?
Oh, yes.
And some of the advances, of course, more and more prosthetics are being linked to the human nervous system. So instead of having to, you know, twitch one shoulder to get the hand to flex, actually thinking about closing the hand and having a force feedback mechanism so you don't crush whatever it is you're trying to pick up, that technology is improving constantly.
The Borg.
Yeah. Well, for somebody who has lost the use of an arm or maybe they're completely paraplegic or...
Why not?
Yeah.
It's amazing what
researchers
they can do.
At Glasgow University, God love the Scots, have successfully developed a new type of artificial skin that is actually more sensitive than our own human skin. It feels soft and rather skin-like, and has a solar panel built right in. So it the artificial limb, instead of being tethered to a heavy battery, could be constantly recharged as long as you're out in the sunlight.
Or would it be possible to be in a building and have light hit it? You know,
well, there's a fair amount of artificial lighting.
Yeah, that could maybe work, make that work. I don't know how well LED lighting, which is becoming more and more common, even in fluorescent tube type configurations, but they'll figure that out too. Yeah.
Got a little more notes before we end this hour. By the way, here's a cheerful thought. New York University scientists have studied ATMs and found that they are, just like so many other things that are out in the public, they are teeming with nasty bacteria. Remember we used to talk about payphones being,
What else is new?
Yeah. Well, and your phone is a
absolutely as
dirty
if
thing.
As if ATMs were any dirtier than anything else. You know, seriously?
Shopping cart.
Yeah. I mean, this is so. Who got a PhD on this?
Yeah, exactly. Who
I guess I'm being a bit sarcastic and unimpressed because, you know, we encounter this stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Moving back to Facebook for just a second. Facebook, of course, the pop-up. If you notice this thing where if you look at something on Amazon, it shows up in your Facebook feed the next day.
So annoying.
It's a little insidious too.
Yeah.
Facebook wants to be the place you go to buy stuff, in addition to controlling every other
aspect of your life.
Yes. They want to be an e-commerce giant. They have a new ad format that lets brands pair their commercials with collections of images. So if you have images of cats, maybe you're going to see an ad pop up for Purina cat chow or something. It's a little Big Brotherish in my opinion.
Yeah, well, you know, Google's been doing that for a while based on the words that are in your emails. So we're kind of used to that. If you know that going into the game, then fine, you could have some real fun with Facebook's statistics and their big data. You know, start shopping for, I don't know what, something that you would never use.
Yeah.
Really. Mess with their data.
Yeah, just start screwing up their data set. But it's bad enough that Google scans all your emails and picks out keywords and things.
There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah, and no such thing as privacy.
Right.
We will continue to report these stories as long as they let us. It's Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda.
Next episode, we got to be less of a buzzkill here.
Exactly. Theme music composed and performed by George Wood. It's called 8-Bit Junkie, available on the PodSafe Music Network. Wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe. Be good to each other. Hello once again, Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world. Welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and of course the tech news you can use in Northern California. It's brought to you by Advanced Automotive of Reading, and we are carried throughout the planet, throughout the universe, via iTunes.
I think the universe is largely unimpressed.
Yeah.
I mean, possibly. Well, I don't know what's out there.
Was that the sound of
Who's
your eyes?
Who's out there? What is there?
Was that the sound of your eyes rolling?
Something
your,
like that.
Something like that. Want something else to roll your eyes over? Millions of Americans still play Pokemon Go every day.
Well, there's worse things.
Yeah.
I mean, if it gets you up and out and about and into, it's sort of like geocaching. I think geocaching is much more interesting because you go places where you've never been before. And you never know. You might find a travel bug and then you look it up and it's really cool. We need to do more geocaching again.
When the game first popped up last July, 28.5 million daily visitors went out monster hunting. For context, that's about 15% of the number of Americans with smartphones. Like the pet rock and other fads of the time, interest faded pretty quickly. But there's still about 5 million daily unique visitors.
That's probably people that are catching up on the phenomenon and
what the heck is all this?
Yeah, about? What yeah. is the fuss about? Right, check it out.
60% of Pokemon Go users, 18 to 34 year old millennials. Of course, it is a location-based augmented reality game, just a matter of days, reached the 20 million plus mark. Now, you could see, now it has proven the potential behind augmented reality games, where maybe you can do, you know, when you play cops and robbers or whatever, using a pair of augmented reality goggles you could have your holodeck with prop type settings.
You know, true. This whole thing, the strong rise and peak, the gotta have, you know, mm-hmm. you're not cool if you're not participating in this or whatever, is not any different than the latest toy for Christmas, right?
Right.
Everybody's gotta have the.
Got to have the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip.
Exactly. You know, and you just weren't cool if you didn't have that. And then and then 3 months later, it's like, okay, they're on to the next thing or it's busted or something like that. So this is just, to me, another reflection of that response in culture, to pop culture. And it is the same kind of approach or the same kind of result. But this one is tracked.
Yeah.
This one, you know, they have hard data on. But, you know, we're only human. So these things happen, you know, and then there's people that probably got in trouble or too addicted to playing right. Pokemon Go, so they have to leave it alone. But then there's quite a steady, you know, bunch of people still out there doing that sort of thing. I've never played it, but I kind of get what it is.
Yeah, I understand it because
like I said, I'd rather go geocaching.
Mm-hmm.
It's Wiki, sort of a modern-day geocache of sorts.
WikiLeaks has sent out new information that they purport to have come from the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, saying that organization has developed tools to infect Apple products like iPhones and MacBooks. Well, you knew this was happening. The tools date from between 2009 and 2013. Probably not going to get into current Apple hardware, but they do probably have better stuff. The spy agency... right away realized the potential behind mobile electronics. Instead of just being able to tap your phone, they had the new you had a pretty good expectation of privacy on a mobile device.
And law supported that as well.
Yeah. So the government agencies, and of course, not just our own government, but of course, overseas governments who really want to know what their folks are up to.
Of course.
WikiLeaks says it's likely that the CIA accessed Apple products and infected them by interdicting mail orders and other shipments. In other words, they were actually getting hold of the phones en route to specific people and injecting the hardware into them. There have been stories now.
So that's, yeah.
Where phones that are confiscated at the airport for inspection are actually being uploaded with malware.
Right.
Lots of allegations. Nobody's come up with any solid proof yet because the operating systems are so complex that to find the code changes would be difficult.
So the thing that's key in this story, though, is that physical access is required for this to happen. In other words, they actually have to have the device in front of them. It's not something that they can, you know, push through in a software update or something like that. That haven't gotten that far yet. And so it's not like it just comes out of the airwaves and gets into your device. They have to have physical access to the device for this to happen. You know, when you think about it from a national security point of view, there is some logic of being able to get into these things. But on the other hand, the argument is just as hard and valid of privacy, that unless there's some overwhelming reason and indicators that there's super secret stuff in there, then...
People are getting whipped up into a froth about this. Do I have concerns over my personal security? Yeah. Am I going to lose sleep over it and go out and on a wild rampage? No.
No.
No. and there's, I can hear it now. Well, you should be! Shout it from the rooftops! Well, what good is that going to do?
Right. The other thing to keep in mind with this WikiLeaks story is that there's some indication that they're talking about older technology, if you will. In other words, this was true at one time, but there's been updates and changes and things like that, that this is no longer some of these things are no longer valid. They don't work anymore.
You can tell these people have a sense of humor, though. The MacBook infecting tool was called the sonic screwdriver.
That's excellent.
Now, you got to be a Doctor Who fan to figure to get that one. But of course, a lot of nerds are.
Understand the reference to the sonic screwdriver and and Doctor Who. That's really cool.
Yep. Now, the CNET magazine is pointing out that a lot of these tools that are listed in the WikiLeaks statement, which, by the way, the CIA is neither confirming nor denying.
Well, of course. What would you expect?
Earlier incident, the WikiLeaks issued leaked documents indicating that the CIA was working into getting into Samsung smart TVs, but you had to actually be there in the room with the TV.
Like all these others, you had to, they had to have physical access.
Theoretically, if you had a hotel where a lot of high-profile foreign agents are known to come and go, they think they might get into the TV and rig it to be a bug, possibly.
And the agents would be stupid to not assume something like that's happening. Come on. If I can figure that out, they can.
Yep.
I don't even live in that world or think like that, so it seems pretty obvious in that capacity.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know you can post just about anything on YouTube within certain parameters. And, of course, our system of free speech means that you can say some pretty stupid stuff and not run completely afoul of the law. People will just kind of shake their head. But YouTube creators are fighting against the video services filter screening out certain points of view, and advertisers are worried about videos, say from ISIS or whoever, or extremist views. So some of these major companies like AT&T, Verizon, McDonald's are pulling their advertisements off of YouTube. So that's large dollars.
Yep. And that's because they do not want to have these robot ad placements, is really what it amounts to, put in somewhere that is does not agree with their corporate image. And I can't say as I blame them. Why would you want your ad on something that denigrates other people or is violent or what have you, that is not, it's just not good stuff.
Yeah, the question I have, though, is who is now... Some people would label anything that comes out of, let's say, President Trump's mouth to be, quote, hate speech and therefore subject to these restrictions. So who is on the board of censors is something that I would be curious about. What are the parameters? What are the standards that are being applied? In certain parts of the country, a video that looks at lifestyles from the gay and lesbian transgender standpoint might be considered offensive. In certain countries, it certainly is.
Right.
As a matter of fact, some Middle Eastern countries have blocked YouTube altogether because of some of these videos. But on the other hand, there's folks in those countries sending videos over here advocating violence.
Right. So the thing of it is, how does that get policed? I mean, how can YouTube, keep all of that together? Or it goes back to, is it censorship or they have standards or whatever? And, you know, YouTube being a company, basically, mm-hmm. They should be able to say that this is acceptable or this is not acceptable. I mean, it's like the film industry's ratings of movies, right? This is family friendly. This is not family friendly. You know, only for mature audiences, so on and so forth. So, how do you do that with as much material that gets posted?
Yeah, again, it's sheer amount of volume. It's like these violent videos on Facebook,
right? Well, and they could be online anywhere. Mm-hmm. And they could be online on a website, and people could go there. And is the internet service provider going to shut that off? Mm-hmm. I mean, where does this start and where does it end? This is a really difficult aspect of that.
It is. Where does free speech suddenly become not so free?
Well, on a worldwide basis, you know, not everybody has the free speech that we enjoy here in the United States of America. But so just picking on the U.S. alone. So it's a tricky one. I don't envy people that are trying to deal with this.
Yeah, it's definitely policymakers.
You can definitely vote with your mouse, though, that if you know a particular site is not to your taste, or you know a particular source, you just stay away from it. Yeah. And then that pulls down ad revenues.
Don't give them your numbers.
That's right. If it's not visited, it doesn't get the advertising dollars. But still very interesting. I blame these corporations for pulling their advertising dollars when they have no control over where their ads are appearing, and they don't want that associated with a violent or evil or whatever things, inappropriate things that they think are inappropriate for their corporate image. Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense to me.
Let's find a better topic.
Yeah.
Do you have a problem going into stores and finding something off the rack that fits you well? In other words, maybe it's fine in one dimension, but not so fine in another.
I don't think there's a person on the planet that doesn't have that problem.
Right. Especially in women's wear. Undergarments. It either bags or it pinches, right?
Undergarments. That's like a whole nother world, yeah. Right?
Well, a Adidas store in Berlin is offering customers a chance to design, create, and purchase a sweater in just a few hours, having it manufactured on the spot. The shopper enters a dark room where a laser body scan will determine the specific dimensions. Then you see potential patterns, manipulate it to be a unique look. Design options then go to a computer screen. You can play around with the colors, and then an industrial knitting machine and some human assistance create your unique piece of clothing in a couple of hours.
That's pretty cool, actually, when you think about it.
Right now the stuff looks kind of cruddy, but
it
certainly
fits,
points in the right direction. We've talked about on the show, wouldn't it be very cool for women's bras?
Well,
that would actually fit.
Someday that's going to be a given, you know?
How about shoes that actually fit?
That's a big one for everybody. That's not even gender dependent, you know? Because how many women have ruined their toes cramming into shoes that don't really fit because it's the style or they just really like them? And there's many.
Steve Martin with his cruel shoes.
Yes, there's many times I would have liked to have bought a pair of really cute shoes and forget it. I have short, wide feet. Thank you, Daddy. Mm-hmm. I got those from my dad, you know. But it's that's a big one. But any kind of clothing is a big one, you know. It's because we're so, thank goodness, different from each other physically. That diversity there is a good thing, but there used to be tailors, right? Well, there still are tailors, but getting custom-made clothing that mm-hmm. fits you as an individual and fits properly is, you know, haute couture at this point almost. It's high fashion after a fashion of important, pardon a bad pun. So I can totally see these AIs and computer assistance in design in body scan and shape and being able to get clothes that actually fit.
Now there is a technology on the horizon where you could actually shop for clothing from your home by putting a reflective strip that is marked accurately standing next to it, and then your phone is taking images of you, like in your skivvies or just in a t-shirt or something. But you actually turn, so the system has a reference in the measured strip, and it analyzes your actual body shape, and the clothing is made to your specification.
How nice is that? I mean, it would be nothing for a robotic system to do these things where it has the right specifications, and voila, it shows up. And there you are. I always wanted clothing patterns that were designed for me. I don't mind making the clothes. I enjoy that. But, you know, not many people do that so much anymore. At one time, that was a big deal, right? Everybody made clothes. But nowadays, not so much. But part of it's the patterns are, they don't fit everybody. And you got to modify them all the time anyway. Because standardization just does not work.
A man accused of sending a tweet to a journalist that triggered an epileptic seizure is facing a hate crime charge and assault with a deadly weapon.
Wow.
The man has been indicted on one count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. The Dallas News reported the 29-year-old man was arrested Friday in Maryland on federal charges of cyber stalking. The Dallas-based journalist who was the victim of the attack has written openly about his epilepsy in past years. In December, a Twitter user sent him a strobing GIF, which induced a seizure. According to the victim, the tweet came with a message, "You deserve a seizure." The incident happened after the journalist had appeared on television and criticized then-President-elect Donald Trump's policies. According to the affidavit, the Twitter account contained direct messages to other Twitter victims concerning the to other Twitter users concerning the victim. The suspect released from Dallas County Jail after posting bail. So we've heard about people with epilepsy being having seizures triggered.
Right.
And apparently this can be done via a phone screen, which is something I'd never heard of before, but it makes sense.
I got news for this guy. If he put as much energy into doing something decent as he did doing this nasty thing, you know, maybe it would have been a great and wonderful thing. Now you get to be, a lot of people get disgusted by this kind of stuff. Instead of applause, you get derision, you know? Mm-hmm. Gosh, we're just on a roll of bad things. What are these?
Trying to find
tech news abuse here, or tech abuse use here. Tech abuse news. There we go.
Yeah.
I get it right yet.
Well, here's a little bit of good news. We reported on how Apple is losing ground in the educational sector. People are opting for Chromebooks instead of Apple computers in the classroom.
Yeah, expense and repairability and things like that.
Apple is trying to get back into the education market with an iPad for $299. The smaller, lighter weight iPad is designed to reignite interest in Apple products in the classrooms, much better than a $600 iPad.
Yeah, because if it gets dropped or ends up in the mud puddle or you know, you're not out a whole lot of money. A $600 or $700 iPad in the classroom is, you can buy three of these for what, full price one. Big one.
And for $99, you can actually put an iPad, and this is an article that appears in Mashable, really cool little case. It's a very rugged, almost military-looking case to put the iPad in that makes it darn near bulletproof. It puts a screen protector in front of it, and then it's a soft, a cushioned case all the way around it, and it opens up like a laptop.
Nice.
And that costs $99, which is a lot cheaper than buying a whole new iPad.
Indeed.
So for about the price, a little more than the price of a Chromebook, you get something that is fairly common in use. The iPad, of course, an early hit with schools. Some ordered thousands. There's a big, remember that big scandal down in Los Angeles where thousands of iPads, a huge pile of money was spent on iPads that then just sat in a warehouse because they were afraid to distribute them to the kids.
Well, what's going to be interesting is to see what kind of features are on this and whether that makes it attractive enough for the educational world to come back into the iPad world. Because, fiscal considerations are definitely there, but capability is another element of that. So, security features or reliability or repairability or all of those things may end up being part of the equation here.
Now, if Microsoft is smart, which they probably got some people up there. If they came out with a entry-level Surface in that, $300 price range, Apple would be in big trouble, as it is right now. The new Samsung Galaxy Tab 3 is threatening Apple's dominance of the tablet market. But if the Surface Pro, or maybe not a Surface Pro, but if Microsoft kicks out with a good, solid $300 tablet, that's going to put Apple in even more jeopardy.
So there's a story here about how to enlarge the view on your cell phone, if you want to look at it that way, that this thing called a super screen.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks like a tablet.
Right. So people that don't want to spend the money on another device, and I can understand that. You can have one of everything, right? And you've got all of these different things, different size screens. Well, this is sort of like having a laptop in a docking station and a full-size monitor.
Right.
It's the same concept to where your smartphone is the computer and has the display, but that display is then put onto a larger screen because, of course, people love the larger screens.
Now,
easier to see.
Right. Several companies have experimented with docking the cell phone to a laptop-type case to get the bigger screen and, of course, access to a keyboard.
Right.
And you can do that, something like that, with this Logitech keyboard, but you're still dealing with that little tiny screen. Now, if you're working on a phablet, then you've got the opportunity to work on a bigger screen. But yes, this is essentially a cheap tablet that ties that all the brains is actually in your smartphone.
So it's currently this company called Transcendent Designs has launched a Kickstarter campaign to raise the money to get this going. And they've already done so. They were after $50,000, and they've managed to reach that already. And, you know, it has some of the features like a little camera and some pretty good amperage hours on the batteries, even a little bit of storage. And so they're looking at trying to get this out for $99 at least early on for the early birds. That order one up, and
yeah,
that, so that could
get
be
a good
deal.
Solid phone like a Pixel or a Galaxy S8 that's coming out very soon. This could be a big deal.
Yep,
literally. Boomer Tech Radio back for one more segment after these messages of Bob and Brenda, and we'll be back. Welcome back. It's Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob. She's Brenda. By the way, the rather nifty theme music that you're listening to is called 8-Bit Junkie. It was composed and performed by George Wood. Got kind of an Atari game feel to it. And I thought it was kind of cute for the show, and I wrote Mr. Wood an email, said, hey, can I use your music for my show? And he said, sure. So I'll have to let him know that we're up on iTunes now, so he knows to use our theme music. Thank you, George.
Yeah, we still haven't made any money, though. So
yeah, we're still.
He said, if you ever do get anywhere with it, just let him know.
That check still hasn't made it.
Yeah, that's a 0.00 check.
So we've been doing things with computers essentially in the same way for nigh on half a century. You have a keyboard input device. You've got a monitor, which back in the day was a gigantic CRT, or a teletype machine. There was a time when your input-output device was a teletype.
I'm probably the only person you know that knows how to key in on a teletype.
Yeah. But we had a order entry system that was all on teletype. And you had the tape all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Well, even more so, the little punch-it-out holes would get everywhere like confetti. Oh, my gosh.
But then we had CRTs for many, many – you know, have you even seen a CRT in a computer – lately that wasn't sitting in somebody's corner. LCDs took over pretty fast.
Yeah, the flat screens are pretty ubiquitous now. Yeah. They're everywhere.
Well, but we still use mostly a keyboard in all the attempts to improve or get rid of keyboards entirely have fallen on you know, hasn't really taken off. And, of course, keyboards still say Q-W-E-R-T-Y. And somebody was asking the other, why that particular layout? We went into that a few shows back. Is that
it's mechanical. Very analog story behind that.
Yeah. In the early days of the teletype machine.
Analog reason, I should say.
Yes. It was the people operating, they had a very efficient key layout that had the most commonly used letters under your strongest fingers. Well, the operators, a lot of whom were women, had very nimble fingers and would jam up the machines because they would type too fast. So the QWERTY keyboard was actually developed to slow you down because it put the more commonly used keys under your weakest fingers. And we've never replaced the QWERTY keyboard because, like with the Dvorak and other keyboards, it's never caught on because we're creatures of habit.
Yeah, it's what we all learned back when, so why change it, right?
So sometime, according to this article in, that came to us on Forbes magazine, within the next several years, wearable lightweight sunglasses will replace the smartphone, the monitor, even your television. Now, these look a lot more stylish than, say, Google Glass, which you got to admit made you look like Jean-Luc Picard on Star Trek when he was a Borg. You know, you had the big thing on the side of your head.
Something like that, yeah.
You will be assimilated. But a group called the Osterhout Design Group has raised $58 million to turn head-mounted displays into $1,000 consumer product, what amounts to fancy sunglasses. So you can't even tell that they are they look like sunglasses with extremely thick earpieces. But built into them is the microphone and probably a camera and a bunch of other stuff. But they can show cinema quality video that's equivalent to a 90-inch high def screen from 10 feet away. So you can either see through them, or they can project an image directly onto the sunglasses so that you can overlay. And this is a big thing for engineers and scientists and for gamers. We were talking about Pokemon Go earlier.
Right. So I remember the first time I came across someone that was talking on a cell phone with a handless, hands-free type thing where the cord was attached in the microphone, and they're sitting there talking to themselves on a bench in an airport. And I'm like, okay, are we talking to the mothership or what? And then, no, they were having a conversation. So an early adopter, obviously, yeah. And I hadn't run across this. So this is probably the same kind of thing. And one of the things that they're saying is that your hand gestures will be like having a mouse.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what detects that, but probably some
camera
or something like that.
Well, there's actually a ring that has the gyros built into it.
Oh, there you go.
So you're doing the Tom Cruise Minority Report thing or Tony Stark.
You're right.
It
knows where your hand is.
In Iron Man, waving your hand around.
Right.
So you have a bunch of people walking down the street slapping each other in the face because they've got an augmented reality device on their face.
I know,
and they're waving their hands
me.
Around that John Williams conducting the Boston Philharmonic.
Yeah, Boston Pops.
Whack!
You gotta
love it,
right?
Can you imagine this on a subway?
I know. It's a crowded environment.
Or on a bus.
Not happening, man. So these unintended, consequences or the how it changes things, yeah. Right?
So here again, changing the ergonomics. Now, of course, we go back to that story about the hack where the image of the flashing image induced a seizure in
right.
a gentleman. Imagine you're using these things and you start getting sent, if you're relying on these as a navigational tool or mm-hmm. finding your way around, all of a sudden the graphics are so good that you get a false reality presented in front of you.
Right.
And you walk off the cliff.
There's that sort of thing. Or what about like VR headsets?
Or it
what
blocks out the bus.
What about motion sick aspects of this, like VR headsets?
Well, frame rates are, as frame rates improve, I think that'll become less and less of an issue.
But it's dealing with the motion that your eyeballs are seeing in front
right,
of you.
Right, right.
And the ear says not. Mm-hmm. So how do you fix that part? So, and part of this is that we're checking our smartphones all the time and the smartwatch and the this and the that and having a headset like this in front of us, then that changes the whole dynamic and interaction with us, more efficient and such like. So who knows where this is going? I could see this becoming a thing.
Yeah. Right now, of course, on all the popular science fiction shows, you've got the transparent computer screen, which I think is dumb because whatever's on the other side of it is going to mess up your view of what you're looking at.
Well,
but that's the big thing.
Yeah,
it's like a VR.
You learn kind of to focus on the layers. I had experience with that, a very analog experience with that, this tower we used to climb up outside the back of the office in my early days in my career had those graded steps. And if you looked all the way to the ground, you would consistently screw up your. So what you learn to do is to focus on the step itself.
Oh, okay.
And so the rest of it just gets tuned out.
Optical illusion.
Yeah, it's like hearing something where you can really focus in. So I think that the brain would learn to deal with those things, but it would also make some of those harder to see, I would think. So who knows?
So I got to add something to your wish list. Now, you tend to use your hardware until it, you know, pretty much falls apart in your hand. You are using my my cast off
because I get your cast off
Galaxy Tab.
Your unwanted electronics.
My Galaxy Tab S that is now going on 4 years old, still going strong.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you like about the Android system over the Apple?
For one thing, well, my iPad 2 was, I think, maybe a little unresponsive, not because it didn't have storage. I just like the fact that it responds more quickly. It just seems to have a better logic about it. Like the Samsung Galaxy phone I have, I prefer it over the iPhone in functionality. iPhone's catching up with some of that, but just being able to type things in, I just think it's more efficient to use. And certainly the screen is nice and vivid, and, it's hard to quantify. I could go either way, mm-hmm. but I just like the Samsung stuff better. Mm-hmm. For the way my brain works, I seem to be able to keep up with Android better than Apple.
So you are well in the fold of Samsung Android type devices.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you may be interested to know that Samsung has released the Galaxy Tab S3, and that's being called basically Android's best response to the iPad Pro. Quite the little powerhouse. It has a 9.7-inch high-resolution display, 32 gigs of internal storage, comes with a fingerprint sensor, a four-speaker audio system.
Wow.
Supports a stylus and a keyboard case, and it's actually a little bit less than the iPad Pro, because my iPad Pro was pretty expensive. But this is being listed as a very popular replacement for the iPad. And I was looking in the article here. Got really good reviews out of The Verge. So for people looking to update their tablet, this might be because I like having the Apple Pencil. There's times when having a stylus to work with your tablet, you know, when you got a lot of stuff on a screen and you're working real close, you can tap the wrong thing.
Right.
But
so. What's the price point on this?
The Galaxy, a fully dressed out, with all the bells and whistles, with a tablet and keyboard case is about $730. And power-wise, it's probably about the same power as my iPad Pro. But my iPad Pro does have more memory. We opted for the full.
There's no we in that. That was your thing.
I didn't beg for too long.
Well, when this crashes and burns, you know, maybe
the Tab
S4 will be around. Yeah. You know, it's the S3. I'll take a look at it. But this one's still got plenty of life left in it. For what I do, you know, I'm not trying to replace my laptop or anything like that. Although I may have to go for a new laptop someday.
Yeah,
I'm going to steal your Apple iPad or your Apple
MacBook Pro.
MacBook Pro. I do like that. That lit keyboard is just. The cat's meow.
But you're unhappy with your Dell, aren't you?
Yeah, it's showing some aging problems, you know, and it was converted to Win 10,
mm-hmm.
and that may be part
came with 7 of and
the
upgraded to
yeah,
10,
it yeah came with 7 and it was upgraded to 10, which might be part of the problem. And the way I use it, I don't put it on battery a lot, so the battery's getting kind of worn out. Mm-hmm. And that happens to any device
any laptop,
anyway.
The battery's gone
absolutely.
In 3 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. So maybe if I replace
but
that.
But it's the updates that drive you nuts.
Yeah. Well, it's because I don't turn it on all the time. And I think that's one of the things that Win 10 assumes or Microsoft assumes is that you're connected all the time. And you're on your computer daily for hours on end and that sort of thing, which in that particular computer I'm not. I use my tablet a lot, but when I need speed and I need memory and that sort of thing, yeah, I go to the laptop for sure. But it behaves well. It's just the updates drive me crazy.
Well, I have my iPad and my MacBook Pro, which, by the way, is a 2012 MacBook Pro. I haven't gone with the new MacBook Pro because I want my optical drive, and I'm not willing to give it up. And my MacBook Pro 2012 is still strong enough to do most of the things that I want to. I upgraded it with a solid-state drive, added more memory, took it up to the 16 gig that maximum that this particular model can handle.
I'm patiently waiting for that to be one of your cast-offs.
Could be a while because unless they fix the MacBook Pro line, I don't want to change it out. I don't know. Maybe I'll go over to the dark side and get a Microsoft Surface or something.
See? There we go. I'm waiting.
Now, you see me using my stylus. But you're kind of an artsy person. You think you'd use a stylus pen type pen?
Yeah. If I had occasion to do, you know, some artwork type things or mess around with some design ideas for this or that. Absolutely. There's nothing quite like a pencil. I mean, like you said, the number two pencil hasn't been changed for quite some time. It's taking an analog concept that works very well and just digitizing it. And these kind of pens are not new. Mm-hmm. They've been around in CAD design and things like that for a long time, right? So it's just that concept of it used in a different way. You know, if I could design like greeting cards and things like that, you know, the artistic end of things... How cool is that?
Yeah.
I like it.
Yep. Let's see here. I wanted to mention about... Okay, and we've talked about this particular topic a bunch of times on this show. Backing up your stuff. Because if you've got all your material just on a single...
single point of failure.
Well, how about our friend with her iPad?
Right.
She got infected.
But she loaded it up, too, and didn't get stuff off of there.
Yeah.
So then when there was a big problem,
she wound
partly
up losing
because she had
all
no,
pictures.
No memory left, she lost a whole bunch of pictures she didn't want to lose. Yep.
So when you either Apple or Android, when you go to the next generation device, like when we got our Galaxy S7s, it was kind of nice because all your applications from your S5 just migrated over. As soon as you logged into your account.
Yeah, that part is nice. Although don't believe them when they say they put the SIM card in your phone, everything will be there.
No, it comes back to you off the cloud.
Well, if you put it there in the first place, but otherwise it just has names and numbers. It doesn't have all those other notes you make on people like addresses and maybe a birth date or something like that.
Well, if you want to back up, of course, you've got a Google account or if you got iCloud. But if you want to use multiple devices, what do you
like
do?
Like we do.
Like
we're
we
not
do.
Married to any particular operating system, actually. We have a number of them.
There's a new company out called iDrive. You know, here we are with the I again. It's an unlimited cloud backup service that works for all your mobile devices, whether they're iOS, Android, or Windows. Rather than a monthly subscription, for a limited time, you snag access for just $20.
Lifetime access.
Lifetime access. I do have some concerns about this because there's no such thing, you know, lifetime when it comes to tech is like a couple of years.
Yeah, well, there's that too, right?
Yeah. iDrive in a nutshell has 256-bit encryption with an optional user-defined key. You can back up your iOS device and restore it to your Android and vice versa. Access backed up files from any mobile device or through the web. Share your files with friends on Facebook, Twitter, and email. This may be something that I want to take a look at. I use Dropbox right now with the 2 terabyte plan, but I'm paying the better part of what $120 a year for the privilege of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I got to give these people credit though. Their iDrive is more like a OneDrive. Yeah. It says capital I. It's not the little I.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you installed Texture on your tablet.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Tell me about it.
Texture is an app that you can get, and it is a magazine service, and I believe they're adding new magazines quite frequently. But
by the way, they are not a sponsor. We wish they were.
But yeah, it would be nice.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. They're definitely not a sponsor. We heard about it actually on another tech show and said, oh, we got to investigate that. Went in there and looked at the magazines they had. So this is essentially an e-reader for magazines, or an e-subscription for magazines. And it's, what, $10 a month, something like that?
Yeah, 10 bucks a month.
Net currently.
And we share our account.
Right. It can be, I think, five devices.
Five devices, yeah.
Yep. So I got to get the laptop hooked up to that. And one thing that I did run into on my tablet, though, is that it took forever to download a magazine.
These are very heavy graphics.
Yeah, looking at National Geographic. So there's a lot of bittage in that. Mm-hmm. And
so if you've got a 16-gig tablet, you're probably going to run out of storage pretty fast.
Right.
You don't think they'll let you store it on a flash drive.
No, but you can kick it off your machine and then download it again at any other time. And you can also save articles. I haven't done that yet because I haven't gotten one of them to download well enough. I got to go to the laptop to try that, maybe. But what I really liked was that each magazine has different categories, and you know how they have sections. They have the letters to the editor, and they have they always have some section in there about a particular thing. A lot of magazines do feature sections, you know, and that's really easy to find. Or like this one magazine that I was looking for, I know they have an index of some of the things that are in the magazine at the end of the magazine. I was able to quickly flip through all the pages and get to the end of the magazine. And you can focus on the one you want, and there we go. I want to look at that one right now. So I happen to be looking for something in back issues because I have the hard copies of this particular magazine. And it was I was very impressed with the functionality of being able to navigate around in the magazine. And so the one thing that is a bit awkward if your tablet is in landscape mode like mine is, because it's in a cover with a keyboard, the magazines can look a little bit small, but they enlarge right away. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem to view things. So you can just move the image around on the screen so that if you make the lettering big, which is kind of nice. If you like really large letters, you can make it that way.
Yeah.
So there was a lot that I instantly liked about it. I wish it had more esoteric magazines in there, but it has a lot of the standards.
It has a lot of your standards that you're going to find on any newsstand.
Right. And you can pick which ones you want to be in your library consistently. There's also features. I haven't even looked at all the features.
Yeah, there's stories that are broken out.
Right, and you can get feeds into your Facebook or something.
So in that case, it's a bit like the Flipboard magazine.
It is, yeah. It's pretty interesting. And this is exactly the same stuff that you would see, near as I can tell, in the magazines.
Ads and all.
Ads and all that you would see in a hard copy version of it. So I know that because I had a hard copy version of one of the electronic ones, and I wanted to compare and contrast it, and it is just look like looking at the one off the newsstand.
Now, there's no substitute, of course, for having that, you know, especially when you're heading into the privacy room for a paper magazine. But it's nice to, if you're taking a long trip, to have a whole stack of magazines in your device that you can pull up. Same with the e-reader.
Books. Right. It's like an e-reader concept. Exactly. Same kind of thing. You can download them. And I didn't look to see if they tell you how big the thing is, how big the file is. And it depends on the magazine as well.
Yeah.
So, you
don't want to keep too big of a backlog.
No. But you can pull articles out, apparently, and things like that. I haven't gotten to those features yet, but I was quite impressed with the functionality of it right away. It's kind of intuitively obvious, and you poke around a little bit in it, and you figure it out.
Now, along
the
same line,
there may be others, but this one is interesting.
Along the same line, if you're a comics fan, the Comixology app for about, I think it's like $6 a month. Gives you access to over, I think it's like 6,000 plus titles.
Wow. Graphics. From graphic novels.
Graphic novels. Now, the really mainstream stuff, you know, Marvel and DC, you got to actually buy. But this is a lot of classic comics and a lot of new stuff, too, from some very up-to-date outfits. Dark Horse is in there. Let me pull up the app here real quick.
And so these are,
if you're a comics fan, some of these titles will. Let's see here. image. Let's see here.
So were these like the comic books us baby boomers remember from our childhood?
Well,
are they like
are.
That?
Some of them are, and some of them are
more elaborate.
Some of them are more elaborate. Oh, yeah. Dark Horse is in here. Ani, Boom, Fantagraphics. These are all major comic book publishers. Dynamite, Valiant. There's, just looking at this, the whole line of Archie comics.
Oh, my gosh.
Are in there.
See, we had a comic book drawer when I was a kid, and other kids would come over and visit, and they loved it because they could get in there and dig up the comics. And we used to have, you know, volume one, number one of something or another.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that poor box has been made into rat's nests by now.
Yeah,
but there might be some valuable comics in there. I'm not sure. We tried to keep them in pretty good shape, but we'd read them and reread them. And we'd go to the grocery store and get the latest version and sit there and read it. And one time we were in a Safeway store, and my brother and I started to read comics, and all these other kids came along and started reading comics, and the manager was delighted because we weren't running around in the store. Not that
go.
We were ever allowed to do that ourselves, but other kids were. He thought it was great.
All righty. Well, that's all the time for this episode of Boomer Tech Radio. I want to thank you very much for listening. Look up our website, boomertechradio.com, and subscribe to our feed on iTunes. Bob and Brenda say, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe. Be good to each other.